A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's the kind of prompt that sits with you. He's a 37-year-old guy living in Israel, married, done everything right to try to get on the property ladder, and after a decade of tenancy at will and unwanted relocations, the rental market is actually the biggest negative force in his life. But here's the bind. He can't find a political party that both wants to fix tenancy law and hold security views he can live with. The parties that care about housing have security positions he rejects. The parties that align with him on security have a blind spot the size of a bus on rental reform. So his question is, what do you do when democracy hands you a ballot full of choices, and none of them are yours?
That's the thing that gnaws at you in the booth, isn't it? You're standing there with a slip of paper, and you're supposed to be exercising the most fundamental right in a democracy, and instead you feel like you're betraying half of what you believe, no matter which envelope you pick.
Political refugee is the phrase he used. And it's not hyperbolic. He participates. He votes. He cares deeply about the outcome. But there is literally no party that represents his actual preference profile across the issues that shape his life. He's a citizen of the system without a home in it.
What makes his case so sharp is that neither of his core concerns is niche. Security isn't some boutique policy preference. It's existential. Housing isn't some fringe obsession. It's the roof over your family. These are two of the most foundational things a government is supposed to secure for its citizens. And the party system has managed to arrange itself so that caring about both simultaneously makes you unrepresentable.
He also raises a really uncomfortable question buried inside the personal frustration. He says he doesn't think it's responsible to be a single-issue voter, because if everyone just voted on their one pet issue, you'd end up with a parliament of 300 rent control parties, and a cannabis legalization caucus, and total incoherence. And he's right about that danger. But the alternative he's living is that multi-issue voters get no representation at all, because no party's platform matches their vector of concerns.
And this is where the Israeli system specifically makes things worse, because it's pure proportional representation with a low threshold and no geographic constituencies. In a district-based system like the US or the UK, you at least have one human being whose job it is to listen to you whether they agree with you or not. You could walk into their office and say, "My landlord is evicting me for the third time in 6 years, and the law does nothing." In Israel, your vote goes to a national party list. You don't have a representative, you have a brand.
The brands don't do nuance. A party's platform is whatever the leader and a small circle decided in a room. If rental reform didn't make the cut during that meeting, it doesn't exist as far as that party is concerned, even if half their voters are renters.
The question Daniel's really asking, underneath the personal story, is whether this is a solvable problem at all. Is the multi-issue alignment failure just baked into representative democracy? Or are there structural reforms that could actually let a voter say, "I care about security this way and housing that way," and have that count?
If the structural reforms don't exist yet, or aren't coming, what do you actually do on election day when you're staring at a list of 40 parties, and not one of them is yours?
What Daniel's describing isn't apathy, and it isn't disengagement. It's the experience of someone who shows up, who reads the platforms, who wants to participate fully, and discovers the system has no slot for the combination of things he actually believes. He's not abstaining, he's displaced.
Displacement implies there's a structure that pushed you out. In Israel's case, the structure is doing exactly what it was designed to do. Pure proportional representation with a 3.25% threshold, 120 seats, the whole country is a single district. You don't vote for a person who represents your neighborhood. You vote for a list assembled by party leadership.
Which means the feedback mechanism between voter and representative is almost non-existent. If you're a renter in Haifa and your building's owner just decided to sell and you've got 90 days to leave, there is no MK whose phone rings with your specific problem. Your vote went to a party, not a person, and the party's agenda was set months before the election by people you'll never meet.
Compare that to a single-member district system. Your local MP or congressman might be from a party you despise nationally, but they still hold surgeries. You can still walk in and say, the rental market in this constituency is destroying lives. They might do nothing, but they have to hear you, because you're a constituent and the next election is local.
In Israel, that channel simply doesn't exist. The entire representational relationship is mediated through the party brand. If the brand doesn't include your issue doesn't enter the Knesset. It's not that you're being ignored. It's that the architecture of the system has no receiver tuned to your frequency.
That's what makes Daniel's rental frustration such a perfect case study. It's not a niche complaint. Roughly a third of Israeli households rent. But rental reform has no natural home in any party's coalition because the parties organize themselves around the national security and religious axes. Everything else is noise.
Here's the structural kicker. When you have no geographic constituencies, parties don't need to aggregate diverse local concerns into a coherent platform. They just need to differentiate themselves on the one or two dimensions that drive bloc identity. So you get 10 parties that all have detailed positions on settlements and none that have a serious housing policy.
The political refugee isn't a failure of democracy in the abstract. It's what happens when the electoral system reduces every voter to a single axis, and you happen to live on two.
Let's put some numbers on this fragmentation, because the scale of it is genuinely staggering. In the 2022 election, 40 parties ran. 10 cleared the 3.25% threshold. And the average Israeli government since 1996 has lasted 1.8 years.
1.8. That's not a government. That's a lease agreement.
Here's the mechanism that makes it worse. A Knesset member can split from their party, keep their seat, and form a brand new faction. This has happened 47 times since 2003. 47 breakaways. You get a party that exists for no reason other than giving its leader a platform to negotiate their way into the next coalition.
When a party exists to serve one person's career, what's the incentive to develop policy depth on anything beyond that person's pet issue?
It's actually worse than zero, because developing comprehensive policy costs time and staff and political capital, and none of that helps you survive the next coalition negotiation. So you get these hollowed-out platforms. The party has a paragraph on the leader's signature issue and maybe a sentence on everything else. If you're a voter who cares about five things, four of them get a sentence.
Which brings us to the mathematical reality Daniel's living. Imagine policy space as having multiple dimensions. Security, housing, economy, religion and state, civil rights. Your ideal point is somewhere in that five-dimensional space. The probability that any party's platform coincides with your ideal point shrinks exponentially with each dimension you add.
If you only care about one issue, you can probably find a party. Two issues, you're already in trouble. Three or more, and you're almost certainly a political refugee. The math doesn't care how engaged you are or how carefully you read the platforms. The system simply isn't generating enough distinct policy bundles to cover the combinations real voters actually hold.
Daniel's particular combination is especially orphaned because it cuts across the primary axis that organizes Israeli politics. The right religious bloc and the center-left bloc are defined by security and religious questions. That's the sorting mechanism. Likud has a coherent security platform but ignores rental reform because it's not on the bloc's defining axis. Meretz and Labor care about housing, but their security stance is, from Daniel's perspective, disqualifying.
What's instructive is the 2024 rental reform bill. It had cross-party support from individual MKs. People from Likud, from Yesh Atid, from Labor all thought it was reasonable, and it died in committee anyway, because no party whip made it a priority. No party leader staked their coalition position on it. When an issue doesn't serve the bloc identity, individual support is meaningless.
The whip system converts a multi-issue legislature into a single-axis voting machine. Even when the individual representatives might share your concern, the party as a unit doesn't, because the party's survival depends on bloc differentiation, not policy delivery.
The breakaway mechanism feeds this directly. Think about the 2021 cycle. Yamina breaks from Likud. New Hope breaks from Likud. Blue and white forms, splinters, reforms. Every single one of these was built around a personality with a founding narrative about leadership and national direction. None of them produced a detailed housing policy. None of them had a serious position on tenancy law. The platform was the leader.
You've got a system that incentivizes shallow platforms, a threshold that forces small parties into unstable alliances, a breakaway rule that lets personalities fragment the policy space further, and no geographic representation to give voters an alternative channel. The political refugee isn't an accident. The system is practically designed to produce them.
What happens when you try to fix it? Because Israel has tried. The electoral threshold was raised from 2% to 3.25% in 2014 explicitly to reduce fragmentation. The number of parties in the Knesset went from 10 to 12 in the following election.
Which makes a certain kind of sense once you think about it. Raising the threshold doesn't make small parties disappear. It forces them into shotgun marriages to clear the bar, and those alliances splinter the moment the election is over. You get the same fragmentation, plus a fresh layer of resentment.
The direct election of the Prime Minister was the other big experiment, from 1996 to 2001. The idea was that voters could split their ticket, one vote for Prime Minister, one for party, which in theory would let them express nuanced preferences. What actually happened was the opposite. People gave their prime ministerial vote to a major candidate and then felt free to throw their party vote to tiny niche lists. They abandoned it after 5 years.
The third obvious fix, introducing regional constituencies so people actually have a local representative, has been proposed repeatedly and blocked every time. The smaller parties know their survival depends on the national list system. A mixed member system would shrink their power, so they kill it.
Which brings us to ranked choice voting, because this is the reform everyone loves to propose. In a single winner district, RCV lets you vote for a minor candidate as your first choice without wasting your vote. If they don't win, your second choice gets counted. It reduces the spoiler effect.
Daniel's problem isn't a spoiler problem. He's not worried about helping a candidate he dislikes by voting for one he prefers. His problem is that no party exists that matches his preference vector across multiple issues. RCV doesn't create new parties. It doesn't generate platforms that combine his security views with his housing views. It just changes the order in which he ranks parties that all disappoint him in different ways.
In a proportional system with a threshold, RCV doesn't even help with the wasted vote problem the same way. In 2022, 4.2% of Israeli votes went to parties that didn't clear the threshold. Those voters had zero representation. RCV might have let some of those votes flow to a second-choice party above the threshold, but it still wouldn't have given anyone a party that actually matched their multi-issue preferences.
The deeper issue is the bloc structure. Israeli voters don't really vote for parties. They vote for blocs. Right, left, Arab, Haredi. Within a bloc, parties differentiate on secondary issues to fight over the same voters. But the bloc itself is defined by a primary axis, security and religion. And if your most urgent concern doesn't sit on that axis, you're invisible to every party in your bloc.
Daniel's rental reform is a perfect example. It's what political scientists call a cross-cutting issue. It affects renters on the left and renters on the right with complete indifference to their security views. But because neither bloc organizes around it, no party in either bloc makes it a priority. The issue has no natural coalition.
We've got a problem that standard reforms don't touch. Raising thresholds backfires. Direct election backfired. Regional constituencies are blocked. RCV solves a different problem. What's left?
There's a more radical idea that's been kicking around for a while. Liquid democracy, or what some people call issue-based voting. The basic concept is that instead of delegating your entire vote to one party for 4 years, you can delegate your vote on different issues to different representatives. You might assign your vote on security policy to one delegate, your vote on housing to another, your vote on civil rights to a third.
You're not looking for a Goldilocks party anymore. You're assembling your own representation, issue by issue.
And there are real-world experiments to look at. The German Pirate Party built its platform around liquid democracy and got 8.9% of the vote in the 2011 Berlin state election. They used a software platform called Liquid Feedback that let members propose and vote on policies directly or delegate their votes to others they trusted on specific topics. Then it collapsed. By 2023, the pirates were at 0.4% nationally. The liquid democracy platform worked fine technically, but it turned out that sustaining a party organization around direct digital democracy is incredibly difficult. People burn out. The most active voices dominate. And the party couldn't make the transition from interesting internal process to actual governance.
The experiment proved the concept is technically possible and politically unsustainable.
At least in that form. Estonia's e-residency program is a different angle. Over 100,000 digital residents since 2014, with infrastructure for secure digital identity and voting. They haven't implemented liquid democracy, but the plumbing exists. The technical barriers are solvable. The human barriers are harder.
What are the human barriers?
Three big ones. First, voter education. Most people don't have the bandwidth to track 20 different policy domains and make informed delegation decisions on each one. If I delegate my housing vote to someone, I need to trust they'll actually represent my view and not drift. And third, coalition governance. Parliamentary systems work because parties bundle policies and negotiate compromises. If every vote is fluid and issue-specific, you have no stable majority to pass a budget or form a government. You might get perfect representation on paper and total paralysis in practice.
Which brings us back to Daniel in the voting booth, staring at a ballot that exists right now, not in some liquid democracy future. What does he actually do?
I think the first move is to stop looking for the perfect party. It doesn't exist, and the math says it probably can't exist. Instead, identify the two or three issues you care about most. Rank the actual parties by how they align on those issues specifically. Then use your vote strategically, not to find your political soulmate, but to send a signal.
A signal to who?
To your second choice party, the one that's close enough on your top issues that they could win you over if they adjusted. If Daniel votes for a party that aligns with him on security but ignores housing, he's telling that party, you already have me. If he votes for a party that's weaker on security but stronger on housing, he's telling the security-aligned party, you lost me because of housing. That's information the party system can actually process.
It's not representation in the full sense. It's triage. But it's triage that might, over multiple election cycles, pull a neglected issue onto a bloc's agenda.
The second thing is to use the channels that do exist outside the ballot box. Civil society organizations. Direct lobbying of MKs who've shown individual interest, even if their party hasn't. The 2024 rental reform bill died in committee, but the fact that it had cross-party support from individual MKs means the pressure almost worked. Sustained pressure from organized renters could change the calculus next time.
The practical framework for the political refugee is vote to signal, organize to pressure, and stop expecting the ballot alone to solve a problem. The electoral system is structurally incapable of solving.
I want to be clear about something here because it's easy to hear all this and walk away feeling like democracy itself is broken. It's not. The political refugee problem isn't a bug. It's what happens when you have voters who care about multiple things in a system that has to aggregate preferences into a governable coalition.
No electoral system can perfectly represent every voter's unique preference vector across every issue dimension. The math doesn't allow it. You can't have a parliament of 9 million customized platforms.
Some systems handle the trade-off better than others. Israel's combination of pure proportional representation, a low threshold, and zero geographic constituencies is basically the worst-case scenario for multi-issue voters. Systems with mixed-member proportional representation, like Germany or New Zealand, give you two votes, one for a party, one for a local representative. That second axis of representation, the geographic one, creates a channel for cross-cutting issues that don't fit neatly on the national party axis.
A local MK in Haifa's constituents keep showing up about rental evictions, can't just ignore it because it's not on the party's national platform. They have to answer to actual people in an actual place.
That's why Daniel's rental reform issue is such a perfect test case. It's a cross-cutting issue. It hits renters on the left and renters on the right with equal force. Neither bloc prioritizes it because it doesn't serve bloc differentiation. But if you introduced regional representation, suddenly there's a second way for that issue to enter the Knesset, through the door of geographic constituency rather than party ideology.
For the individual voter right now, the shift is from looking for the perfect party to what you might call a portfolio approach. Your vote is one tool. It's not the only tool. Vote for the party that best represents your top two or three issues. Then use your post-election voice, letters, tenant unions, civil society organizations, direct pressure on individual MKs to pull them on the issues they're ignoring.
For citizens who want systemic reform rather than just coping strategies, the thing to push for is a mixed member system. Some MKs elected regionally, some from national lists. It's not a magic fix, but it creates that second axis of representation that can cut across the block structure and give orphaned issues a home.
The rental crisis Daniel's living through is invisible to the current system, not because it's unimportant, but because the system only has one lens. Add a second lens, and suddenly you can see it. Yet, I keep coming back to Daniel's actual life in this. The 10 years of tenancy at will. The unwanted moves, the feeling that the thing causing the most disruption to your family's stability is somehow not politically legible. You can vote, you can protest, you can write letters, but the system looks at your biggest problem and sees nothing.
That's the part that sits heavy, isn't it? It's not that he's disengaged, he's the opposite of disengaged. He's thought about this more carefully than most voters ever will, and the reward for that careful thought is discovering that the system has no slot for the combination of things he actually believes.
This isn't uniquely Israeli. Every democracy faces the same tension. You need to aggregate millions of individual preference profiles into a governable number of parties. Aggregation means compression, and compression means loss. Someone's full set of concerns gets flattened into a single party label that captures maybe 60% of what they actually think.
The difference is how much loss the system imposes. Some systems lose less. Mixed member systems, systems with genuine local representation, systems where parties have to compete on multiple axes instead of one. They still lose information. They just lose less of it.
Which leaves us with the question Daniel's really asking underneath all the structural analysis. Not just how do I vote, but is this what democracy is supposed to feel like?
I think the honest answer is partly yes. The gap between your full self as a citizen and the simplified version of you that a ballot can capture is real and permanent. No electoral system will ever close it completely. The question is whether the gap is small enough that you can still see yourself in the result.
Here's where I want to leave it. If you could design a voting system from scratch, one that perfectly captured your multi-issue preferences without flattening them, what would it look like? And would the results still be recognizable as democracy, or would you have built something else entirely?
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the high medieval period, around the 12th century, European scribes occasionally used a technique called palimpsesting, scraping ink from parchment to reuse it. Centuries later, researchers recovered lost musical notation from beneath later texts, effectively hearing melodies that had been silent for 800 years.
Scribes were the original bootleg recording industry.
A reminder that the show was produced by Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own impossible question, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.